The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Is Charles McNeil Curry. He's Chief Rates and Currencies Technical Strategist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Wow. I'm looking at your note from the 12th, and you said you're still a gold bull, and you thought that it could break 1533 and get to 1450 or so before renewed stabilization. What are you thinking today as you're watching your screen?
Well, I think the risk is, well, first off, it's happened much faster than we'd initially anticipated following the break of 1522. And actually, we wrote over the weekend that if weakness continued through this 1450, 1395 area, we could actually see a run down to about 1300, 1263. So there is still pretty decent substantial weakness potential here. And the way price action continues to decline in terms of it's doing so on very strong momentum, it looks like we are probably going to see a test of those secondary targets. But if you do take a step back and you look at where we've come from 1999 forward, this is still very much a long-term bull trend. In fact, you really need to see a break really below about 1036 to say that the trend has turned and that this long-term secular bull has run its course. So at this stage in the game, it's certainly not comfortable watching weakness transpire of this magnitude. In fact, I think the two-day decline, if you include Friday and today, it's the largest two-day decline since, I think, like the mid-1970s. So it's certainly historic by any measure.
So how long could we be in pause mode then? If you say this is a bull market that will eventually resume, are you talking about a very short-term pause?
We've really been in a pause since September of 2011. Right, because that's when we made our highs back at the highs at 1921 or thereabouts. But it's not uncommon, let's say it, for a secular bull trend to have a correction of this magnitude on a percentage basis, and potentially for this length of time. Although it's not, you know, necessarily the norm. If you look back to the bull market rally in gold from 70 to, you know, the 70s to 1980, we had a multi-year correction transpire in between. If you look at what we did on a percentage basis back in 2008 at about 33-35% from peak to trough, what we've done so far is not quite is coming close to those levels. So,
but you know what? Isn't it possible? Okay, your argument is looking at the charts. Look, we're still in an uptrend. But yep. If gold continues to drop, maybe we saw that peak back in September. And if you look at the fundamental argument, which is gold as a haven, do you really need it? Stocks are higher. Inflation isn't rising despite everything central banks do. So from a fundamental side, some people are saying, you know, gold is seen as its best days. It's not going to get back up there.
Well, there are those making that fundamental argument, and then there are the people on the other side making the fundamental argument that what we're seeing here is a repricing of growth, and once that gets priced in, the long-term trajectory for gold is still to the top.
What do you mean? What do you mean by repricing of growth? Be a little more, flesh that out.
Well, people are starting to price in the potential that that growth is going to be a bit slower globally than anticipated,
okay,
with like what we saw overnight with the weakness in China and then the breakdown in Chinese stocks there. As people starting to think that maybe gold's, you know, that China's not going to do as well as initially anticipated, that Europe is going to slow a bit more quickly than anticipated, and that potentially we see U.S. markets start to slow on the back of the sequester, or so you know U.S. growth start to slow on the back of the sequester and whatnot, and as such, the market, or specifically gold, and combined with positioning, is starting to price that in, and that once that runs its course and that gets priced in, it would set the stage for a resumption of the larger bull trend. So that's the fundamental argument. I mean, I'm not, to be clear, I'm the technician, and I look at price action from the perspective that market discount fundamentals relatively quickly, and it's the perception of those fundamentals that drive markets. But the fundamental argument, especially on our side, by that I mean the Bank of America Maryland side, is that we are seeing a correction within the context of the still larger ongoing bull trend.
So, Charles, we saw a couple of key technical support levels being broken, and that would have triggered huge liquidation, huge positions likely were liquidated. Will we, over the next couple of days, do you think, see some investors, some funds, some hedge funds, just getting back into gold at the lower positions?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there's definitely been a lot of conversation and talking. If we are, you know, hypothetically speaking, a client will call up and say, where should we buy? And say, all right, here are these levels. Lots of people do think this thing is overdone and are trying to put their hand out and will likely
Are
do
you
so.
Advising them to wait until it does get to 1036?
I'm not a big fan of trying to catch a falling knife. My approach is you let this thing run its course. As we get into support, you look for signs of stabilization and a potential base and turn, and then try to trade back.
It seems, too, that when you've had such a sharp move down, I mean, it's just the door is open to some kind of sharp move up at some point.
Yes, but the key phrase, I think, or a key point of what you just said is at some point, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this can easily turn into something where, oh, we were only 20 minutes from the low, but that 20 minutes was 10%. So,
well, yeah. That's certainly what we've seen today, isn't it, Charles? Down 9% now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Like I said, this is the largest two-day decline since 1975.
Yeah. Exciting.
Or the mid-1970s.
Yeah.
Before you were born.
No, about 2 years after.
Okay, so more with Charles McNeil Curry. He's the Chief Technical Analyst for Currencies Fixed Income at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. More on gold, more on bonds, too. That's next on Bloomberg Radio.
This portion of the Hays Advantage is brought to you by Delta's Economy Comfort. Offers more workspace to maximize flight time. Upgrade to Economy Comfort at Delta.com. Delta, keep climbing.
So, an historic couple of days in the gold market. Gold down about 8.5% today off the lows, but $126 an ounce at $1,375. We were just up near 1,600, then just under 1,500, but we sliced through so many levels today in the gold market. We're very happy to have Charles McNeil Curry on with us now because he is the Chief Technical Strategist for Currencies, Interest Rates, and Commodities at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Now, Charles, you say we're still in a secular bull market. And I think to anybody who's listening today who owns gold, if they've held on to it, they're heartbroken, they're shattered, they're wondering, gosh, I blew it. I lost so much money from where I was. So map this out for us. You say we're still in a long-term secular gold market. Is gold going to get back above $1,900? Is it going to move higher? Looking at the charts, I know you can't time things perfectly, but what kind of time frame? But explain what's the trajectory from here? Or how do we get there? Or when do we get there?
Well, I mean, I think it might be 2 years, it might be a couple of years before we make new all-time highs. But again, remember, context is important here in the sense that we haven't seen a new all-time high since September of 2011, so we're looking at about a year and a half. But this bull market began back in 1999, right, when we tested 251 or whatever that was. So within that context, it's definitely premature, although it might be fashionable to say it's over. At this stage in the game, it is well premature to say that this is the end of the bull.
Okay, there are people out there who have said that gold was going ultimately to $2,500 an ounce, $3,000 an ounce. What do the charts tell you?
Yes, I think that's definitely possible still. One of the things you have to remember, and this is true of commodities in general, if you go back and you look at long-term bull trends, by that I mean secular, so anything longer than the business cycle, what tends to happen is the final stage of a bull trend tends to be almost parabolic in nature. It tends to move very, very aggressively in a very short period of time. An example of that would be silver. If we think back to 2011, in April of 2011, when we got up to just shy of $50, about $49.80 or thereabouts, the 3 months prior to that, the rate of ascent was 88%. So we effectively went from let's say $26 up to $49 in a very, very short period of time. We didn't really see anything like that for gold. We haven't seen any kind of big parabolic move, and in fact, it's fairly rare, if not, I won't say, you can't never say never, but it's very uncommon for a commodity market to carve out a broad top with like what we've seen over the past 2 years in gold. More often than not, what you tend to see is a big spike up, a big spike down, and that sets the stage for a much longer turn in trend. So when you look at the chart from that perspective, and you look at historical returns of commodity markets from that perspective, I think it's, again, if this were the 1921 high set forward back in September of 2011 were the high, it would be very, very unusual for commodities in general.
Well, Charles,
it would be a very unusual case.
We're seeing a sell-off across the commodity complex, really, but so much more pronounced when it comes to gold. Do you know or have you heard, are the sovereigns selling?
That I wouldn't know about. I don't look at positioning flows, and frankly, it would be inappropriate for me to add to mention one way or the other, even if I did know, based on client confidentiality and whatnot. But that is not how I come to my conclusions with regards to financial markets. Individual flows have no bearing on how I look at how I look at markets.
Yes, of course, because you look at the technicals and the charts. Just trying to get a little bit of information out of you if you had heard any rumblings in the markets. So what about silver then, Charles? We're seeing the same type of thing in the charts for silver?
Silver looks like it's, frankly, silver's a little bit more. I'd say disconcerting, simply because, as I said a couple minutes ago, the example I used with respect to, you know, parabolic type moves, where gold didn't really have that. I mean, we had a pretty rapid ascent into the highs in September 2011. It was nothing compared to what we saw with silver. But, I mean, again, silver went from $26 up to $49 and change in about 3 months, right? Like an 88% appreciation if you annualize out significantly more. We have seen that, and that suggests that silver is going to weaken significantly further. In fact, that we may not see new highs again for silver for a very, very long time, if at all. And in fact, I think over the medium term, silver is probably going to make a push back to $16, $17 area before all is said and done.
And how about palladium, platinum, some of the other precious metals?
Sure. They don't look quite as bearish. In fact, if you looked at palladium, I mean, it's still, yes, it's come off significantly and on the back of general commodity and base metal and precious metal weakness for that matter, but it's still within the context of a rather significant range trade going back to the 2011 extremes. So, yes, it doesn't look very comfortable in the near term and maybe the medium term, but bigger picture, it's still, you know, palladium is still very, very, very constructive. And then as far as platinum goes, platinum looks a bit more negative. But again, we have yet to see a real significant break down there in terms of taking out previous significant lows, like we saw in the lows back in 2011, 2012.
And what about
the 1300 area?
What about copper, Charles? You know, a proxy really for global growth in some ways.
That is actually quite disconcerting, because if you do look at the price action in copper, it does look like we're going to see a push to lows that we haven't seen since, you know, 2010. So I tend to focus more in on the 90-day forward LME copper, which is priced in dollars per ton rather than dollars and cents per pound is quoted for copper on the New York Commodities Exchange. But
right
there, we could see a push down to about 66. I'd say 6,000 area, 6,600, 6,000 area.
I'd like to know a little bit more about your view on a couple of currencies. The yen in particular, since we've gotten up around 100, what do the charts tell you?
Well, so there's a couple things going on with regards to yen. One, we are stalling at this 100 area, which is, you know, really if you take it 101, let's say 101 half, which is, you know, one, a big psychological number, which is important. Because one, we tend to anchor, market participants tend to anchor around big handles, especially options structures and whatnot. So oftentimes you'll see price action stall around big round numbers. But you also have significant long-term range lows between 2002, 2008, which transpired at this 100, 101, 102 area. So we're stalling up against there. And as gold corrects, you have to remember that as we were in this range for some time with gold and dollar terms, a lot of people started to shift their trades to long gold, short yen, long gold, short sterling, long gold, short euro. And as gold corrects and as those trades start to be unwound a bit, you're seeing the yen come under a bit dollar yen come under a bit of pressure, but the yen appreciate in part at least because we are seeing some of those trades come unwound. So people are selling gold and buying back their currencies.
So
in the near term, it's stalling. But the bigger picture, it's we've had a significant long-term change in trend there.
I want to ask you about the euro as well, Charles. But when you're formulating your forecasts and your ideas from looking at the charts, does it take precedence to look at them in conjunction with one another, relative to one another, as opposed to sort of just looking at a dollar yen chart?
Yes, very much. So what you're referring to is within technical analysis, a discipline called intermarket analysis. And I guess the example I always give the clients when people are asking about that, it's like looking at all, the Australian dollar. You can't have a strong view, in my opinion, on the Australian dollar if you aren't trying to factor in what's going on with copper, if you aren't trying to factor in what's going on with, say, you know, Chinese equity market or some kind of proxy for perceptions about Chinese growth, if you're not trying to factor in some kind of metric for investor attitude globally towards risk. All of those tend to factor in under the chart of the Australian dollar. So yes, I tend to look at a lot of intermarket analysis, if you will. I do a lot of intermarket analysis when trying to come
Charles,
to
Treasuries. You see the 10-year possibly getting back down to what, about 1.5%?
Yeah, 150. So 150 is the big pivot since June of last year. Well, since summer of last year. And with that, we'd expect the curve to bull flatten. So we're looking for, if you use 5s/30s as a proxy for the Treasury curve, we'd look for that to make a push back to about 208 basis points, maybe a bit further. But yeah, we do look for Treasuries to rally further over the course of the next couple months.
And just really quickly, Charles, you only have a couple of seconds left, but the euro, $30.81 today.
Mm-hmm. In the near term, again, as you know, as gold remains under pressure and some of these euro gold trades come off, gold or euro could squeeze a bit higher. I wouldn't be surprised to see it trade up to 133. Mm-hmm. But the trajectory for euro is to the downside. More likely, we this bounce ultimately gives way for a push down to about 126.
Wonderful.
Charles McDill Curry, thank you so much for joining us from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. 12:30, we'll be back with Chris Repke from Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi, but keep it right here. Betty Liu is with us in studio, in the loop, in the half, starting right now on Bloomberg Radio.
From the financial capital of the world, this is WBBR New York, Bloomberg 1130.
In the Loop at the Half is presented by Prestige Motors. Prestige Motors offers luxury brands and experience at non-
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.